time here. Probably my last time in a while anyways. We're making plans to move to Vancouver Island. Some personal reasons. One is my father is sick. He's got cancer. It's looking good for him, but it still, that's kind of what our future holds as a family, is moving back home where I grew up, to Vancouver Island. So let's make the most of this last visit together in a while, and let's enjoy ourselves and learn from God's word together. Big day to yesterday. What was the big event yesterday? Anybody know? Has to do with the province, BC. Yeah, there's some kind of vote, right? You guys woke up today with a new premier. Wow. Tentatively a new premier, premier designate, but premier nonetheless. The old premier, you guys know what his name was? The old one? The old leader of British Columbia? Gordon Campbell, that's right. And the new premier's name is? Christy Clark. Sounds like a superhero name, right? Christy Clark, Peter Parker, Clark Kent, Christy Clark. And if you had ran into Christy Clark, let's say, 2 days ago, and you asked her this question, so what do you do? She would have been kind of not sure what to say, because she was unemployed. She'd been laid off. She'd left her job at the radio station where she had worked previously, and she was on the road talking to Liberal Party members. Any Liberal Party members here today? You don't have to raise your hand, but if you want to. Nope. Okay. Talking to 90,000 Liberal Party members around the province, trying to convince them to vote yesterday in yesterday's online vote. Only the party members could vote. But it's easy to become a party member. You can be 16 with $10 in your pocket, become a member. But it's too late now. So anyway, if you asked her, what do you do, Christy Clark? She would have said, well, I don't have a job right now. I'm trying to get a job by getting votes from people. So I'm traveling around. And if you didn't know any better, you'd probably say, oh, so you don't work, you just travel all the time? She said, no, that's not what I do. I'm involved in online media and networking through Twitter and Facebook, trying to get the word out to change BC online so you sell things on eBay. She said, no, that's not what I do. She would be kind of trying to convey to you what she does. And it would be difficult, I think, unless you follow the news like I do, then you immediately know what she does. But today, if you ran into her and said, hey, Christy Clark, so what do you do? She'd say, I'm the leader of British Columbia. I'm the premier. Much easier way to answer. Now, I personally find this question, so what do you do? That's the question you get, you know, when you meet someone new or you get to know somebody. Or if you're a student, maybe it's, so how'd you do on the test? Or, so what's your degree in? What are you studying in school? Or what's your part-time job? For me, I don't really like the question too much. I find it tricky because I've been unemployed since August. So what do you say? I'm unemployed. I tried something else. I tried to just say, I'm in between jobs, which means I'm in between the job I used to have and the job I'm hoping to get. But then people really think, in between jobs, so you're juggling two or three jobs? So that really didn't work. So it's a tricky question if you're unemployed. If you're retired or you can't work for medical reasons or whatever reason, it's also a tricky question because you say, I'm retired. And you immediately want to maybe talk about what you used to do or what you could have done. It's awkward because for so many of us, we link our jobs. Well, for students, I'm trying to bring the students in. I know this. I said hey to a few students over there. Hey. For students, maybe you link your identity not with your job because you're not working, but maybe with your test scores. Or maybe with what university or college you're thinking of going in. If you're a college-age student, maybe you know our society wants to link our identity to what degree you're in. And so because our society kind of works that way, you kind of are what you do. If you're unemployed or you're retired or you're in between jobs, it's tough. It's a tough one to answer. Or what if you got a great degree, but you don't have a job in your field? Maybe you're underemployed and someone, you know, you have some kind of swank thing. They're like, hey, what do you do? And the guy or the woman is dressed pretty nice and you're thinking, you know, I think you may be higher on the scale than me because I got a degree in something, but I'm not working in that field. Or maybe you have a degree or you used to have a great job, but you left that to raise your kids. Again, it's a tricky question because you're like, I'm a stay-at-home dad or I'm a stay-at-home mom or whatever the lingo is for that. We keep changing the lingo for what that is to try and make it have more worth than the old lingo did. I'm a housewife. Oh, not very interesting. Or I totally trump you in what I do. I'm an investment banker. Or whatever the dialogue is. It's a tricky question for so many people. Now, for some of you, it may be a completely great question because maybe you completely love your job and you love talking about your career and it is you. You are your career. And then for you, this is a great question because they're like, so what do you do? And you're like, I'm an investment banker, but I studied to be a doctor. And you're like, you're right up there. And you like the question. Well, that's tricky too, because one day you won't have your career. You'll be laid off or you'll be retired. And your whole little house of career identity is going to crumble. And you're going to be scrambling around for, okay, all these years, my career has been my identity. What do I say now? What do I do now? Let's see if I can use this thing that someone gave me. I guess I can't. Maybe this way. Nope. I'm afraid I won't be able to use this. Because I'm inept. Oh, did I press it too many times? I think I got it. Here's the thing. Here's why I don't like the question that much, and maybe you don't like the question that much. Because isn't it kind of in our culture to believe this? That the person with the better job, or the better degree, or the better scores on the test, the better person? Now, we know that's not true. Exactly, right? We know that we are far more than our test scores, far more than our jobs, far more than our accomplishments, because we know we are also our personality, we are our interests, we are our family, we are our places where we volunteer, the place where we come to worship. Our identity is far larger than our grades or our classes we're in or our job. We know that. You could ask anybody on the street, and they would often, when you get down to the kind of the base, the vulnerable place, everyone would say, okay, I know I am not what I do. I am not my title. But still, that's kind of out there. And the problem is, I'm trying to do this again. Maybe it's just a pause. I press it and wait. There it is. That is the trick. Or else, actually, who knows what's happening? I'm pressing the button. It's not doing anything. And those people are seeing me press a button, and they're pressing a button to, like, boost my self-worth. So, like, I figured it out, but I actually did. Isn't that true? Isn't that exactly what's happening? Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to go like this. Go like this. Anyway. And here's why we still play the game, even though we know, and we hope everyone else knows, that we are not our identity. I mean, our identity is not what we do, or the grades we got, or the classes we're in, or how we did. We still play the game, the kind of one-upmanship. It's like, well, what are you? I was chatting with a friend, he goes, well, here's what happens for me. So what do you do? In his head, he's thinking, okay, I'm only a first-year plumber. And so I just rip out toilets all the time. But I don't want to say that because that's not that great. Because what if you think I am what I do and you're going to ask me to rip out your toilet, or you're going to just think you're better than me because you look like you're more fancier than me. So I'm going to say I am a plumber, but I'm going to go to school and I would like to use my skills to help homeless people. And you kind of add some things on to what you do because you don't know that the other person believes what you believe, which is you are not your job or you are not your test. Some of you fail the test. They say, so how'd you do on the test? You got a C. You're like, I got a C, but it was the teacher's fault. And I can do better next time. You add on things because we don't know that they don't know if we are our work or our test. So we don't know. If they believe that, we don't know what the other person is thinking about us. So when they ask us, what do you do? What are you studying? How do you do on the test? We know we're not that, but we don't know that they know that we're not that. So we play the game anyways. And we give an answer, and we trump it up, or we add a few things, just to kind of, because we don't know, they might be playing the game that we don't really believe in, but we're going to play it anyways. That game didn't work that time. Herein is the answer. I believe, well, the answer is throughout Scripture, but I'm kind of zoning in here on Philippians 3. There it is. And I think in here we will find the answer, because we're going to read about someone here who you know as the Apostle Paul, and he's going to be listing off all of his accomplishments, and then he's going to say something about his accomplishments, all of his straight A's and his master's degrees, and he's going to be listing off all of his, you know, every great job he had, all this kind of his accomplishments and his public esteem and everything that he has going for him to make a point. And the reason why he's going to make this point is because the people he's writing to were starting to be influenced by some other people who were telling them, your identity with Christ, the fact that you are forgiven, is not enough. It's not enough. You are not good enough. You do not rank high enough by just being a simple Christian and just being simply forgiven. You have to have something else happen to you. And what these other people, these kind of, we'll call them the Paul's antagonists, or Paul's, not his enemies, but I guess he actually, when you see the language he uses, they are his enemies. Because they are saying things that Paul would never say. Paul is saying, grace is enough. As we're singing in some of the songs that Hazel and her team picked, brokenness is where you'll find your completeness. Your freedom is in forgiveness. That's what Paul was teaching through Jesus. And these other people were coming in and saying, oh, that's nice for maybe the kindergarten Christian, but if you really want to be somebody, your identity has to be more than that. If you're male, you need to be circumcised, and everyone else needs to be keeping different rules, keeping certain holidays, to really be up on the scale for God to like you. So Paul comes in and contradicts that fairly strongly, as we're going to see in these verses. Here's how he starts off. Philippians chapter 3. Could someone grab me a tissue? That'd be just a tiny little something out of your pocket's fine. I thought I had one in my pocket. Chapter 3, verse 1. He says, further, my brothers and sisters. So he's like, let's refocus here. He says, let's refocus. Further, my brothers and sisters, rejoice in the Lord. Let's come back, refocus on what I'm trying to say. It is no trouble for me to write the same things to you again, and it is a safeguard for you. Meaning, I could preach this message every Sunday, and it's always going to be applicable. There's no point in your life where this message that I'm sharing with you is not going to be important. Verse 2. Now he's going to talk about his enemies, the guys that are saying, you need to accomplish something to be important, to be special. Forgiveness is not enough. Watch out for those dogs. Now, they didn't have cute pet dogs like we have. They're talking like street scavenger dogs. Like the mangy dogs that you'll see if you've ever been to Mexico, or you see coyotes in the neighborhood. That's what he's talking about. Not nice dogs. Dogs. Those evildoers. Now these dogs, these people that were saying you got to accomplish these things to really be special, they thought they were do-gooders. Paul says, you're not do-gooders. You're evildoers. Those mutilators of the flesh. Like, can you get more nasty? These guys are saying, if you're male, you need to be circumcised. And Paul says, they're not circumcisers. They're mutilators. Because God's not interested in that. You're not special because of some surgery that you've had done on yourself. Verse 3. For it is we, Paul's referring to him and his team, who are the circumcision. He's referring him and the true believers. He's saying, the circumcision that God cares about is the circumcision of the heart, which is a fancy word that simply means Your heart now belongs to God. You know, you can be a child in a family and behave every way that your parents tell you to, but in your heart, cursing them and hating them. But you're still behaving the way they want. That means your heart is against your parents, but your behavior is for them. Paul is saying, the true believer, his heart is with the Lord. And the behavior, these rules that you're making up to achieve identity, is not important. Because it's the heart that's important. We are the ones that have the pure heart that is close to God. We are the ones who serve God by His Spirit, not by scissors or keeping certain days. Spirit. We are the ones who boast about our accomplishments. No. In Christ Jesus. And who put no confidence in the flesh. When he's talking about flesh, he's talking about the natural way that people live. This belief in our culture that you are what you accomplish, and if you're not accomplishing anything on the scale of accomplishments, like working and good grades and going to school and great jobs, if you're not accomplishing those things in the flesh, those natural things that our culture says are important, you're not important and you're not special. He's saying that's called the flesh. That's the natural way of thinking. We're not that way. We put no confidence in the natural way of thinking in the flesh. Verse 4, though I myself have reasons for such confidence. Now he's going to really slam those dogs and mutilators of the flesh, the ones that are saying you are what you do, not who you are in your heart. We're going to get to that in a minute. He's going to slam them pretty hard. We go to the next slide. This is the second half of verse 4. If others think that they have reasons to put confidence in the flesh, he's saying, you know, these enemies of mine who are telling you have to do this, this, and this to be special. You know what? If that was true, I would be the most special person in the entire world. Because look what I have done. I have more. You know, you're 20 years old. You just come to faith. You're thinking about getting circumcised so that God likes you better. You know what? I was circumcised on day 8. You can't do that. You're 20. Get yourself a time machine, go back in time to your 8th day. Maybe you can compete with me, but you cannot compete with me in the natural world. I was circumcised on the 8th day of my life. Next one, of the people of Israel. Because the other people were thinking, okay, I want to be special. These new guys are saying, I got to keep these rules and get circumcised to be special. To be in Israel, to be in God's family. Paul's saying, hey, I was born into God's family. I'm a Jew by birth. Not only that, but I'm of the tribe of Benjamin. They're telling you, you get circumcised, keep these rules, get this achievement, and you're going to be in Israel. Well, how are you going to possibly get into Benjamin? Impossible. I am trumping you on everything they're telling you is important. A Hebrew of the Hebrews. I was born into this. In regard to the law, they're telling you keep all these rules, do circumcision, all these other things. You know what? As far as the law goes, I've never broken any. I'm a Pharisee. I'm of the group that doesn't just keep all the rules. We make a whole bunch more, and then we keep those ones too. That's what I have done. In regards to zeal, you know, like they're all passionate, like go get this surgery, keep these rules, start doing these holidays. You know what? I had more zeal than any of you could ever have. I was out there killing people for God. That's my zeal, persecuting the church. As for righteousness, that's right living. Because the problem with the way they were thinking was, we all want righteousness. If you're new to faith, or you're checking out faith, you've never heard that word before, all he's saying is, everybody wants righteousness, which means they want a right standing before God. You know, when people say, what do you do to me, back when I was working, and I say, I'm a pastor. You know, a lot of people, not church people so much, but it's still there. A lot of people in just the regular world, you say pastor, doesn't matter if they're an investment banker who used to be a doctor, who's got $1 million in the bank. You're a pastor, you know God, supposedly, because you're a pastor. You trump everybody. So it was difficult for me. Some pastors deal with that by saying, oh, I'm a leader in a church, to kind of downplay it. Or if they're a youth pastor, they say, oh, I'm a youth worker, kind of downplay it, because they don't want to all of a sudden distance themselves from the person asking the question. Paul is saying here, as far as righteousness goes, I'm faultless. In other words, people think that a pastor, because they have the title, because they work in a church, because they're all about God, that they have a better standing with God than everybody else. Does anyone actually believe that? Anyone who reads the Bible or is in the church knows that's not true. Because the pastor may have the title, but he's just like everyone else. Peter writes in the 2 Peter, in one of his two books, that we're all priests. We're all royalty in God's family. There's no hierarchy. And Paul's saying here that's righteousness, is a right standing before God. Is that God, you stand before God, like I'm way up high here and I got this pulpit and it looks like I'm like more important. Pretend God's up here looking more important and you come up here and you would hang your head and you put your hands in front of your eyes because you know what you were thinking before you came here. You know what you were thinking before this, what you did last day. You know what you're really like. And you do not feel like you have a right standing with him. You cannot look him in the eyes. Righteousness is being able to look God in the eyes and saying, I know I'm okay with you. And that's what they were trying to get these people to do. They're trying to create a righteousness based on how good they can be and what their accomplishments were. And Paul's saying, if that was true, I have far more righteousness than any of you and all you're trying to do, because I trump everything you're trying to do. As far as righteousness, as far as a right standing with God, as far as being able to look in God's eyes and say, God, I know I'm okay with you, because look at all this big list. Look what I've done. Look who I am. Look what I was born into. He says, if we just go natural, I'm faultless. I am perfect. Verse 7. Next slide. Thank you. But whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. He says, since I've met Jesus, I know that the law, the flesh, the natural way, getting righteousness by my identity and what I've accomplished is nothing. When I met Jesus, I got forgiveness. I got that right standing with God. I can look God in the eyes and say, I know I'm okay with you because I've been forgiven. I can now stand up in front of your judgment seat and say, I've been forgiven, God, because of Jesus. I'm with him. And God says, you're okay with me. You're with my son. You're okay with me. Paul's saying, that's what gets us righteousness. That is our identity. And it goes further. Verse 8, what is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ. Notice he says, knowing. It's not what you do, it's who you know. And look who I know. I know Christ, Jesus, my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. All my accomplishments, that big list I just rolled out to show you how idiotic attempting to please God by what you do is. All of that is nothing. I've burned that list. I don't care about it. I consider them garbage. Now, the word garbage there in the Greek is far stronger than just our word garbage. You know, clean your room. You got garbage in there. That's not Greek garbage. Garbage is like the nasty stuff in the streets that those mangy dogs are eating. That's all that garbage is good for, is just being eaten by the mangy dogs. He's saying, everything I've accomplished is that. Some people translate it as excrement. In the King James, it's dung. It could go that way. You could say it's the only swear word in the Bible. But other translators are just saying it's just street garbage. That's what my accomplishments are as far as getting to look God in the eyes and say, I know I'm okay with you, not because of what I've done, but because who I'm with, and I'm with Jesus. That I may gain Christ, verse 9, and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, not looking in God's eyes and saying, I'm okay with you because I've kept all these rules. He says, no, that doesn't fly because nobody's that good. He says in another chapter, Paul's hilarious, he says, even though I was faultless, what's the 10th commandment? Thou shalt not covet. He never lied, but he was always coveting. He says, I kept all 9 perfectly, but the one that you can't really control, the one inside your mind and your heart, I was wanting all kinds of things that I didn't have. So I'm as worse as you can get. Yeah, on paper, I'm the best, as you can see, but in my heart, I know I'm the worst that I could ever be. But I can still look God in the eyes and say, I'm okay with you, not because of what I've done, but because who I'm with, and I'm with Jesus. So everything else I will just throw away. It's garbage. I want to know Christ. Verse 10. I want to know Christ. Now, if you're sitting here today and you don't know if you can look God in the eyes and say, I'm okay with you because look how good I am. And you can't really say with confidence, I'm with Jesus. Paul describes it very simply. He says it's simply knowing Christ. It's being identified with Christ. It's simply saying, I want to be forgiven. Dinesh D'Souza, in his explanation of Christianity, in his debate with, I can't remember if it was Hitchens or the other atheist guy, he defines Christianity as, if you want God, you can have him. That's God's entrance into his family. His entrance into righteousness is simply wanting it. It's nothing you can do. It's just saying, I want to be able to look you in the eyes and say, I'm okay with you. I want that. And the Bible says you can have it if you go through Jesus. So traditionally Christians have said, okay, do you want that? If you're here today and you don't know, you can look God in the eyes and say, I'm okay with you. You're still trying to... You're thinking you're still kind of good enough to do it? Yeah, that could change right now. You could change this very moment by just saying to God, say, God, I want to be forgiven. I want to be in your family. I accept the forgiveness that Jesus has offered me. I say yes to the offer of free righteousness. I want to be able to say, it's not what I've done, but who I'm with, and I'm with Jesus. And as soon as you say that in your heart, the transaction has been completed. The exchange has happened. You are now identified with Christ. That's why people who have done this call themselves Christians. So they'll publicly say, I am identified with Christ. I am going to heaven, not because I'm good, but because I'm forgiven. Now, how does this relate to the opening question? So, what do you do? How'd you do on that test? What's your degree in? Here's how it makes a world of difference. Now, we'll go to the next slide. We are special because we are forgiven, not because of our accomplishments. I'll say it again because it's so simple, it might escape us. You're special because you are forgiven. Not because of our accomplishments. We can now go into any conversation with someone that says, so what do you do? How did you do on that test? What are you studying? And just tell them the truth. Say, hey, I'm employed. Unemployed. Or say, hey, I work at McDonald's. Or say, you know, I can't work. I have a disability. Or say, you know, I didn't do good on the test. No excuses. Or say, hey, I got a degree. I got a law school degree. But I'm doing online financing or web design. That's the truth. Because you do not have to play the game. You can jump off of the race, the rat race. Say, I'm not going to play it because I know. I knew it before, but now I don't even care if you don't know. My identity is not tied up with my test or my degree or my lack thereof or my job or the lack thereof or my great job or the lack thereof. Because my identity is tied up with, I'm forgiven. And that's it. You can just tell the truth. You can be free to tell the truth of what you do, or how you did on the test, or what you're studying. You know what? A lot of people, you tell the truth, they asked you that question because they just want to get to know you. They just want to know who you are. Most people, But they're in the same kind of, oh, I don't know, what if he doesn't know that I know that? We got to play this game. A lot of people are just like, I just want to know you. That's why I asked you what you do or how you did. I know, of course, there's a lot of people, you know, annoying friends in school. So how'd you do? Did I beat you again? No, yeah, you did beat me again. Congratulations, you beat me again. And you know, if you beat me next time, that's going to be fine with me inside. Because my identity is tied up with, I'm forgiven. I'm going to look at one more quick verse that's earlier on in this book. It's in the next slide. Philippians 2:3. Paul says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Playing the what do you do, how did you do, what did you get, what's your degree in game is called vain conceit. It's like, I need to prove myself to you. That's called vanity, because it's not about you. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, humility is saying, I'm unemployed. Or saying, I'm an investment banker. It's just what I do. You ask what I do, here's what I do. I can't work because I'm on disability. That's humility. Because you know you're forgiven. You can be humble because you got the greatest identity ever. You can look God in the eyes and say, I'm okay with you, because not because of what I've done, but because of who I'm with. So rather, in humility, value others above yourself. Here's what you can do next. What do you do? How'd you do? Here's what I am. Here's what I did. But how about you? Tell me about yourself. What are you interested in? You don't even have to say, so what do you do? You can just say, so what are you interested in? That's a far easier question to answer. Because you're giving them value. You answered their question, now I'm going to give you value. What kind of things are you interested in? How did you spend your weekend? What did you do last night? What are your hobbies? What are your interests? Tell me about your family. You know, make up your own question. But you don't have to say, what do you do or how you did? Say, what are you looking forward to? What kind of things are you interested in? How do you spend your time when you're not working? Get interested in them, value them, and you've now given them value, and guess how they feel? They feel good. They feel great, which is how you feel because you've been forgiven. You are now taking that great, special feeling from God that you've been given, and you're sharing it with someone else. Because you're jumping off the rat race of the question and asking them something about themselves instead. And caring about them. No longer are you worried about, oh, how am I going to look in this transaction? It's now about, I want to make you look great. I want you to feel good, and I want to get to know who you are. Tell the truth and value the other person. Ask a different question. And affirm their value. I believe that's how you would apply this text to that particular situation that we're all going to be in, either in the next few days, the next few weeks, or the next test, or the next time you meet someone who asks you about your job or your degree. Tell the truth, and then ask them, well, what are your interests? What do you do with your time? Ask a different question. Ask a value-laden question. Instead, I think at this point in the program, help me out, Lorraine. Benediction now, because I know you did their offering. Oh, offering. Okay. I'm going to let Lorraine come up and deal with that. Okay. And then I'll come back up and say one last sentence. Thanks, Lorraine.